Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back. It's episode 62, season 3 of the Daily Intermission Podcast. It's Greg in studio. It's Justin from New York. He's dealing with finals, exams, the university scene. Justin, man, how you making out, man? How's that workload feeling?
Not too bad at all. Just getting into it here on this Monday. So we had a big study session today for investments. Got formulas, definitions, just going nuts right now. So I got Tuesday, Wednesday exams, Friday presentation, 3 projects in between. It's a busy week. The weather's unbelievable, which never helps because you just want to be out there golfing. But funny enough, quick story, golf, literally yesterday, so Sunday, I got a guy on the team, Moran, buddy of mine, a great guy. We kind of shoot the same. So we've been here for 3 years, both of us, kind of the same kind of golfer, like great day. We could break 80, but on average, we're going to be like that 82 to 88 kind of range.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been talking about doing our version of the match for 3 years now, but haven't been able to get it done. Sunday's the day. We got the memes going back and forth in the chat. We got banter going on leading up to this thing, and we're ready to go for this match. So first 4 holes go, he goes par train to start. And again, I'm an 80s golfer. I'm not parring this course like nothing tomorrow. So I go down 4 strokes in 4 holes right away, and it's gloomy quick for me, okay? We take the turn to hole 5, kind of getting the groove going, find a par. He makes a bogey, get one back, and all of a sudden it clicks for me. I finish the front 9, tied with them at a 42. Respectable for us guys. Hey,
oh, yeah.
6 over 42, we'll take it. But I stormed back on the last 5, tied up going into the back 9. The wind starts. Clouds come overhead. It's like it's Sunday condition at the U.S. Open, and you couldn't ask for more on the match, right? So
yeah, yeah.
I go up 3 holes early. First 3 holes, go up 3 strokes early. Again, rolling off that the end of that front 9, and I'm up 3 strokes. Kind of squandered a little bit here and there. Put a ball OB on 16. Got a drop. Never helps. So I'm up 1 on 17. He's got a 3-footer to stay within 1. Had a nice chip. Put it close. Had to go up and down. Was a little off the front left. He misses it from 3 feet. Don't know how it happens. Missed it. Couldn't handle the pressure. That's how it goes when you're in the match. Okay, but that's how it is. We go into 18. I'm up 2. Nice and easy. Pipe a drive, clear the bunker, the fairway bunker. I'm 215 out. I'm a little bit on the rough, no big deal. He hits a line drive through the trees. He's been getting bounces all day. Then goes through the trees, bounces straight out, beautifully laying there again, 220, something like that. He puts one 5 feet short of the green. I absolutely tow my hybrid, my forward, 10 feet in front of me. The worst case scenario. I then go from the vesque on that side into the water on the right. I'm now hitting 5. I'm now hitting 5 on 18. He's hitting 3, and I'm only up 2 strokes. Put one off the backside of the green. He bladed his off the back. I match him. He missed his final putt. He could have put it to a playoff. Get out of there scot-free. Win by 1 stroke. Hey, those are just the – hey, there's amateurs here that'll listen to that. Understand the OBs. Understand the blades.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the thrill. 1 by 1 stroke. I couldn't be happier. Golf game is what it is, and just got the job done in the grittiest way. It wouldn't make good TV, quite honestly, for any amateurs who could relate to that. But, hey, that was my week. Had to share that story. Felt good to get that win under my belt.
Absolutely. I mean, was there anything on the line? And listen, man, like I always wonder too, like when I'm watching these pros play all these courses, like this week, at least past week at Wells Fargo, which we'll get into, like what would like a scratch golfer or your golf course fire at these courses? Because these guys are so much better than every single golfer that you've ever seen play. It's so insane what these guys do week in, week out. And for the people who don't like watching golf or they don't understand golf, it is so incredibly difficult. You have no idea how hard that sport is. And these guys make it look 100%. So easy.
100%. You know what? The thing we did too, and not many people do this, every day. Obviously, it's pretty golf as you will, kind of more the amateur golfers. But we did bowl and hole. There ain't a gimme in sight on that round yesterday. We did everything's got to be put in, and that's what happens for amateur golfers like myself. You have a 2 or 3 foot putt, it ain't automatic, and most of the time, people will give that to you or you'll take the gimme and all that. But man, when I would love to see like a lot of amateur golfers who maybe think they're like an 80 to an 85. You play ball in hole for all 18 holes and see what you actually shoot. Cause
you have to play ball in hole. It's not golf. If it's not like a gimme when we're playing is legit like a tap in, like, yeah, you pick it up. Yep. But like, you know, if you're anywhere outside of like this, like a very, like, you know, like we'll say like, you know, 5-6 inches, that's not a gimme. You miss those time to time. So,
100%. But what, so let's think about this. Okay, let's say a golfer who says he's like, say he's like, what kind of golfer are you? What's your handicap? Say the guy says he's an 83, 84, 85.
Yeah.
What percentage of rounds do you think that they're playing ball and hole? I know you might do it. I like to do it too. But yeah, like realistically,
well,
like,
well, no, everybody in casual rounds, everyone in casual rounds takes gimmies. Like that's just the fact. And really only when you're playing for money or it's kind of a tournament, that's when it's ball and hole. But ball and hole, I mean, you think it's 3-4 strokes a game, you know, around. I mean, I would think, I, you know, and I mean, the handicap system is so funky, man. It will never be credible. It will never be fully legit because it is on the player to enter the score. So like, you know, 100%. You know, you have to enter every single score, which is just, it's just not the case. Like you get guys who, you know, they're like a 2 handicap and it's like, man, I don't even think I've ever seen them shoot 2 over. Like they're always in that 7-8 over range. And I'm like, how are they a 2 handicap? Anyway, it's just a weird system, but it's such a great game. Today, close friend of the show, Drake Batherson, he flew home today from Ottawa. It was his first round of the course. We played early this morning with his old man. It was a fun round. But after the round, we went upstairs for some lunch and I'm in the parking lot. And so this is a crazy little story. So 2 years ago, I've worked in the golf industry. I've worked at Jasper Park Lodge. I've worked at the Fairmont Chateau Whistler. I've worked at my home course that I play at for almost a decade, walking across the street in middle school. Like I have lived in the golf industry. So a couple years ago, Justin, I'm playing in a tournament and there's a Bushnell rangefinder magnet on my cart. It was one of those tournaments where the superintendent makes the course very hard. It's like the very last tournament of the year. They call it Rick's Revenge. Rick's our superintendent. So I see this rangefinder on our cart and I was playing with another good friend of the show, Jacob McDonough. And you know, I thought it was his, he was just hanging there. And so it's a like top line Bushnell. And I'm like, okay, this is unreal. So I'm using it and I'm passing it to him. And he's like, yo, Greg, when'd you get this? I'm like, what do you mean? When did I get this? I thought it was yours. Anyway. So I kind of went in the shop and I was like, did anybody like say they lost the Bushnell? And it's like one of the last days of the season. Nobody lost it. So I just thought, okay, the golf gods have just given me a gift. Honestly. So I've been using it for the last 2 years. Well, fast forward to today, I'm in the parking lot. And I feel bad that, you know, this mother I know her children walks up to me and it's been 2 years. Like I haven't thought twice about it. I've been using it. She goes, Greg, do you have my rangefinder? And I'm like,
what? What is your relationship or connection with her?
So like, we live in a pretty small area here in Nova Scotia. Yeah. So like I went to school with her kids and she, you know, she's a member. And I mean, you want to talk about just almost a bit of shock. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
She's like,
did you like have it on you at the time?
Well, my clubs were in the car. I went in the car and got it for her. But I felt like I've got a horrible conscience, man. I felt terrible. I'm like, you know, like obviously, you know, if she would have reached out, you know, at any point in time, I'm willing to give it back to her. I mean, clearly it's hers. It's not mine. And I play with the pros, the director, I play with everybody of like that holds an employment status at the golf course. And they have heard the story of me finding this Bushnell. And it's kind of like, yeah, nobody's asked for it. But when she came up to me and was like, yeah, that's my Bushnell. I was like, I am so sorry. Like,
was it word of mouth? Like, how did she all of a sudden after 2 years just snipe you with the Bushnell?
I have no idea, but I will get to the bottom of it. I have no idea how she knew that I had had it or that,
oh,
you know,
my God.
So I don't know that end of the story yet, but I will find out how, you know, that, you know, the word of mouth found, you know, how the telephone, but I mean, I'm happy that she did because, you know, obviously here I'm thinking that I've, you know, found a steal that somebody had come in from Kenwell because honestly, man, those things get lost all the time. They transfer hands like no other. I've been on the wrong side of it to a 60-degree wedge in Whistler, but that's for another story. But honestly, man, Honestly, dude, like, you want to talk about shock? It was, I feel bad. I really do. But yeah, I lost my rangefinder today. I shouldn't say I had to give back the rangefinder that I found. So we'll, you know, we'll get, hopefully, we'll have to, you know, do some browsing around for a new one because honestly, hang they on. Make a huge difference. Do you have a rangefinder, Justin?
Well, yeah. Hang on. I got one right somewhere right in here. Hang on. Give me a sec.
Cause that man,
so what's your take? So I'm a big, my grandpa put me on this. He's fanatic golfer.
Yeah.
I go Garmin watch.
Okay.
Active GPS tracks me. Like again, I, cause I know the Bushnell. I know the one you're talking about. You put it up to your eye, you snipe the flag.
Yep.
Wherever you are, call me lazy, what have you. This one tracks, obviously it's continuous tracking, right? It knows the bunker, knows the layup spots on the fairway. If you want to be 100, 150 water, et cetera, green flag. But it's just like anytime I'm on anywhere I am on the course, just flick the wrist up and it's actively moving with me. So like, I love it. Cause I just, and it keeps my scorecard when I'm on the green, it asks me for the score of the hole, put it in. Like, you know what I mean? Like it tracks all my rounds and it's just on my wrist. So, I mean, that's what I go with and I've loved it.
So does it show you front, middle, back?
Yeah. So the thing I could do with this one is when I'm say on the tee box, if I'm on the middle of the fairway, I can move the flag on the watch to exactly where I see it on the green.
Okay.
And it'll give me exact to that spot.
And plus so, two, yeah, like I all mean, you really need is like a range of like 5 yards. Like I'm sorry for the majority of amateurs, like a 173 and a 178. Like, 100%. You know what I mean? Like that's, you're trying to hit it within the range. So I like that a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to
like, again, for an amateur like me, guys, people relate. I'm a give me the front of the green guy.
Yeah.
My ball. I don't have the sticky ball, the backspin, all this action on my ball. Give me the front of the green, let it roll to the middle kind of thing. And I'm happy if I have to kind of go up and down. So that's what I use for. But yeah, it gives me front, middle, back, all those things. So.
Gosh. Yeah, I know I'm going to have to look into one, but that's how that went. And honestly, man, like I've been feeling kind of like, I felt a little sick to my stomach when that stuff happens. Yeah, man, because you're just like.
Golf stuff gets lost all the time. Oh, I think you're for sure. Right, but yeah, and I'm sure when you gave it back, you're apologetic. There's no questions asked.
Oh, 100%. No, and I was so automatic. Good. Like, yes, but like, it's just so surprising. Like, it's just something that I've been, it's like, it's been two full seasons of golf. And you're like, excuse me? Anyway, it was quite it was quite the story. But over the weekend, Justin, we talked about it. I had an episode with Derek from FLA, man. I'm telling you right now, like through the last, I'd say 3 years, MMA, man, has just grown on my radar so much. I am so captivated by that sport. There's something so compelling about, you know, just the commitment these guys have to fitness and, you know, whether it's boxing, grappling, jiu-jitsu, you know, whatever, you know, martial art they expert in or you know, you have got to be well-rounded to fight in the MMA. And I had never been to a fight live. So I'll just tell you a quick story. So my dad and I get there. My dad's a huge fight fan now too. So, you know, obviously when we watch hockey, we love when guys drop the gloves. When we watch football, we love when a linebacker is running downhill and absolutely blows up the running back. Like there's just something about violence that makes sports, you know, fun to watch. And it, you know, I don't know what it is. If it's, you know, just ingrained in us as human beings, but we're captivated by violence. And
one of the truest forms of sport in human history. No, like
100%,
maybe running. I think I agree 100%.
100%. So we're watching this and the second fight of the night, 30 seconds in, there's a huge takedown. As the guy's taking the guy down, he gets in a triangle choke with his leg and he's tapping out. And it's like, oh, it's just, it's so phenomenal to watch. So shout out the guys from FLA. And if you are in Atlanta, Canada, you got to go check out one of these events, because if you haven't seen Fighting Live or if you're not even really into the sport of MMA, I'm telling you right now, if you're a sports fan, you will enjoy it. These guys are incredibly athletic. The commitment, like I said, to, you know, their trade and their craft. I mean, I don't think there's anything like it. I mean, in regard to, you know, how strict their diets are, how, you know, strict those 6 weeks are pre-fight in terms of their training regimen. Yeah. And then they go in for 15 minutes and it's a 1v1. Who is 100%. The better fighter? Incredible.
Yeah. And Greg, I'll just input, you'll agree with this too.
Yeah.
Like this is for the more, I guess, more of the Canadian listeners we have going on here. Like CFL, like MLS, like Canada loves their sports. This is like, this would do great in Canada. Like a Canadian circuit for like, we're never getting a UFC event, maybe Toronto, maybe Montreal at some point. Like again, those are the big ones, but like Canadian fans will come out in the smaller cities and like they would love this. So this is obviously great to hear that this thing's going to be getting going and hopefully it keeps expanding because I would love to catch a fight live. Like you said, I've never been to one in my life and I would love to see it.
And it's like, it's just when they're in the cage fighting, it's like, it's just must watch. You're glued to it. And there's nice breaks. It's just so phenomenal. They did such a great job. Their pay-per-view and they got the, you know, obviously the, you know, everything's FLA, the gloves, the shorts, they did such a great job. So obviously, you know, for small town Atlanta, Canada, they put on such a great show. But awesome. Justin, we've been absolutely putting on a rant in the pregame show today. So let's get into the quarter one here. We've got a miscellaneous quarter. We're going to change it up. Obviously, we've been getting in, which we will get into the NHL and NBA series, but we're going to get into a little bit of a miscellaneous quarter here with the PGA Tour, Formula One. Justin's got some Champions League. You guys all know my football soccer knowledge is some of the worst in the league. And we'll update you guys on UFC 288. It's funny you said actually Vancouver hosts the next big. They're coming to Canada for the first time in years. UFC 289 is going to be in Vancouver.
There you go.
In quarter two, we're going to move into the NHL. Quarter three, we've got some NBA talk. Obviously, we're going to break down all the playoff series, what we've seen in the last few days. And then in quarter four, we'll talk about the MLB. But let's get things going, rocking and rolling here. It felt like for a little bit at the Wells Fargo Championship this week on the PGA Tour that we might have had a winner. We had Sung Jae Im in the mix. Victor Hovland, after a couple days, was sniffing around. We had Tommy Fleetwood, obviously, the first round leader. We gave out all these bets, but in the end, Wyndham Clark, the bomber, gets his first win on tour. Huge win for this guy. Yeah. Getting your first win at an elevated event, massive for his exemption on tour. A $3.6 million win. But unfortunately, we couldn't get the outright winner. But we'll be back in the mix this week. Did you catch any of the action? It's tough to watch golf with all the sports we got going on right now.
Yeah. No, I did catch a little bit of it, mostly Saturday and then early Sunday. But yeah, first of all, unbelievable by Clark. This guy went minus 19. And you know what? I was thinking about this when I was watching it. Like, this is working out, I think, perfectly for the PGA to have these higher paying events at these kind of tracks. Because obviously we know the majors and we love the majors and you get that competition. But what is it, Greg? Like maybe one, two events kind of go in that the negative double digits in terms of scoring. Like, obviously, U.S. is known for its hard course. Yep. St. Andrews scores pretty well, but like you'll have weeks, you'll have years where the wind and conditions are so hard that it's tough to play. Where then you get these PGA Tour events, and it brings to mind a guy like Cantlay who was winning in the past few years on these events because he could birdie phenomenally, but when he went to the majors, those aren't tracks that you're going to birdie
it's
every hole.
It's like a huge birdie fest. Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Where now we're getting golf in a massive field, highly competitive, and we're just seeing scoring after scoring after scoring. And I thought it was electric. I thought it was a great mix to have a high payout in an event like this.
Yeah.
Secondly, the Archman, like, this is insane right now. Again, we had two top 10s. We had a top five, and we were in it till Sunday. So we're going to keep the train rolling here, and Archie's going to, I'm sure, stay hot. What a snipe for him to have that top five pick. But extremely, extremely impressed just seeing how electric I'm tuning into PGA Tour events with a lot more intrigue than years past because what's on the line?
Absolutely. I think that this elevated event, you know what it does is it just brings all the top talent on the PGA Tour and it brings them to one event and it guarantees that they're going to be there. And I know Jon Rahm took the week off, but everyone else that's in the top, that are top players on the PGA Tour playing in these elevated events, it's amazing. Like I said, the content's incredible. And yeah, Quail Hollow is just such an incredible course. But yeah, I mean, Tommy Fleetwood had a great week. I mean, Xander Schauffele was sniffing around and Wyndham Clark inevitably gets it done. This week we've got the Byron Nelson. So it's not it's huge, strong field, but you know, these Texas boys, they love the Byron Nelson. They like to tee it up. So we've got Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth. We know they're Texas boys. We know they're going to be there. They're the two betting favorites this week. We've got K.H. Lee, who had a good start to last week. I'm not sure where he finished, probably in the top 20. I mean, he had a good week. He is coming off back-to-back wins here at the Byron Nelson. So, is anybody, popping off the page early? Obviously, we'll give out our best bets on Wednesday for outrights, but you'd have to think that it's going to be someone from this cream of the crop that's going to take the dub. And then, obviously, in the next week, we've got, next week's the PGA Championship after this. So
electric.
Electric. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. May 18th, May to May 21st is the PGA Championship, and we've had great weekends of golf in between the majors. Like, this is phenomenal. But, yeah, who I see right now, I'll give the listeners just kind of a glimpse in who I'm thinking of before I make. Obviously, we're going to lock in our two.
Yep.
There's four guys that jump off the page or to me here. Two Kims, Tom Kim and Siwoo Kim, I think. Are going to be tremendous value. We'll see. Again, going to lock them in later on, but I think they're playing great golf. And again, if you're not looking at just that top of the line and odds here, I like their chances. I really do. So I think they're playing great golf. I think they have the opportunity to have a competitive weekend right to the end. But the two that I'm seeing, Scheffler's had a month off. Scotty Scheffler's had a month off, and I think that's going to be an advantage. Another thing, sneaky little piece here. If Scheffler starts off a little slow, John Rahm went double bogey to start the Masters. Again, I'm not saying Scheffler's going to double bogey or anything like that, but if he's not winning wire to wire, you could see that number look a little bit more enticing for you. So I think he's a name to be really close on. He's got a lot of time to prepare for this event. Again, a month off, he's not coming into this event with just absolutely no intention. He's coming in to play a great round before the PGA Championship. So he wants to come in hot into that next major. And then the other one's Tyrell Hatton, third on the board here. And I think he's another guy who's been playing great golf that could, he just finished tied for third this weekend. A little bit less competition here. It's really about, in his eyes, can I go after Scottie Scheffler? So I think that's something where if he's got the hot hand right now, that's a name that most people might not see as something that's so attractive, but I think he's going to have a pretty good chance at it.
Yeah, man. Hatton, I find, like, obviously, world-class player. Like, I would assume that he's in the top 20, 25 in the world, but he is so incredibly difficult to pick right. I mean, he rides so hot and cold, emotionally and playing-wise. I mean, it's hard to pick him, right? But I do like Hatton. Scottie Scheffler, it'd be interesting to see if there is any rust, but obviously, rest and recovered, we know what he brings to the table. When he's playing at his best, this guy's the best player in the world, right there with John Rahm, right there with Rory McIlroy. Jordan Spieth's interesting. Obviously, we know Jordan Spieth, next week, looking ahead, he'll be looking to be the sixth golfer ever to win all four major championships. The only major championship he's missing is the PGA Championship. So Jordan Spieth has another opportunity here to be the sixth golfer of all time to win all four. So, you know, is he going to get in the mix? Does he want to win? I mean, obviously, when you tee it up, you want to win, but he's going to be a guy to watch. I mean, obviously, he wants to play well.
Hey. Let me input on that Spieth call. I'm looking at it right now. These are his last few events here. Tied fourth, tied for 19th, so top 20. Tied third, tied fourth, second place outright, but coming off a missed cut this weekend. So, again, people might look at that missed cut, but, man, he's playing great golf if you kind of take the body of work here lately. So, that's a good eye.
Absolutely, yeah. So, we'll see what happens. Obviously, I'm going to be on him at the PGA Championship. I think that he's the type of guy that has the stones to get it done. But it was the Formula One. We'll move outside the PGA Tour into the Formula One world. Obviously, they were in Miami this week. The stars were out and about in Miami. I mean, it seems like it's just such a big celebration when there's an F1 race on through the week. And do they do the qualifying on the Saturday, Justin, or the Friday, and then they race on the Sunday? But man, like
they do it right before. Yeah.
Yeah. But it just seems like Max Verstappen, he was in the ninth spot starting off and ends up winning. Like, is this guy, like, is he going to challenge Lewis Hamilton? I'm assuming Lewis Hamilton kind of has that gold status right now, or obviously of our generation, but Verstappen just seems like he's just an automatic win. Like, you probably would have got some good odds on him starting in the ninth spot.
Again, that's the battle with F1. And I don't think it's going to be a secret. Me and Greg are going to kind of get into this more and more as we keep going. And it's going to be something where I'm following it a lot more as of the last year for me. And it's about the cars. If you're talking about like looking at what the value and stuff is, like, the cars are such a massive piece to this. And obviously Red Bull sitting 1 and 2 with Verstappen and Sergio Perez. Like, their abilities are just almost unmatched. So, yeah, it's absolutely something where the starting spot could be a little bit of a factor. But for the most part, it's going to be Verstappen every time. But what you could look at a lot more is the future championship. But then again, like, when you get into the race weekend, it's going to be kind of like positioning. You can kind of look at where each car is going to finish, more of sort of like the Red Bulls, the Ferraris, the Mercedes, et cetera, like that. So, yeah, they're heading to Italy next race, so that'll be another one where I'm sure the stars will enjoy their vacations there. So,
yes.
Gonna tune into that one. Probably watch Verstappen win, but I'm interested to see again Perez. Like, is Perez gonna be someone who's gonna be number two the entirety of the way. Like that, those cars are just such powerhouses in the Red Bull machine right now that it's going to be interesting to see if that's just going to be something that's also a lock. Is Red Bull just going to become a 1-2 lock right now for the rest of the season?
Is Perez a guy? Because obviously it's noted that, I mean, the viral scene where, you know, he's driving and you know, in the cockpit in the control room, they're like, let Max pass you. And obviously he was verbally upset about that. But is this a case where we could see Sergio Perez switch banners or cars just because he's sick and tired of being number two?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely something to keep an eye on in the offseason, I think. Like, I mean, you're right, because he's showing that he's a top-end driver. I mean, he's finishing top two every single race. So, I don't know, between me and you, I think we both agree I wouldn't be too happy with just being second fiddle. If I could get to a car brand here and a crew here that is going to say, hey, you're a number one guy, and we're going to start putting money into this thing to compete with Red Bull, because you showed that you could race with the guy. It'd also be a great storyline for F1 if all of a sudden Perez is in a vehicle that could actually compete with Verstappen to take that title. That'd be unreal to see.
I find it hilarious in regard to, you know, the athletes. Like right now it's the Ferrari athletes. Like it's a Leclerc. I do believe, like, they're just like, our car sucks. And earlier this year it was Hamilton with Mercedes. Like, our car sucks. It would be horribly frustrating for the engineers and the designers of these cars for their athletes to be like, this isn't good enough. So,
and it's like that sometimes. Yeah. I mean, what the rules are, the lower you finish, the more time you get to work on your car for the next race. But then it just ends up being Red Bull and Mercedes. Like, I really do wish, though, like, F1's growing in popularity and we're getting into it too, like, more and more. I really do wish it was something where, like, you had that competitive nature.
Need some parity. Sure, I think the sport needs it.
And if it was like three or four cars that could beat Verstappen, and it's not just Verstappen, no matter where he starts. But again, we're going to get into it, dive into it. See, I'm interested in Perez for sure moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin reached out last episode. And obviously, you guys remember in the fall, I was trying to kind of spit it, but I'm not as educated. I've watched a bit of the Netflix series. I should probably dive into the totality of I should watch toe-to-toe the Netflix series so I can really be versed or more versed in the F1 world. But Justin, he wants to talk a little F1 in the miscellaneous quarter, and we're going to start bringing that to you. But he also wanted to mention the Champions League in Europe. Yeah. What's going on there? What should the listeners be noted for in the soccer world?
Yeah, massive week here for Champions League. We got semifinals begin here for Man City playing Real Madrid. The Real Madrid obviously being last year's champions. And AC Milan playing Inter. Obviously two Italian teams going at it. A little bit of a derby there. But Man City versus Real Madrid can't be understated. I guess if I were to put it into NFL terms, this is Kansas City Chiefs playing against the Buffalo Bills, I guess you could say. Maybe the Patriots playing Kansas City Chiefs, because this Real Madrid, obviously one of the most historic, if not the most historic clubs in the world. They win the most Champions League and one of the best international teams. Coming off the win last year, and this Man City team is an absolute juggernaut. Like, this is going to be something where they have Erling Haaland, the number one goal scorer all season, both in Premier League and Champions League, going off against a well-rounded Real Madrid team. Like, it's going to be a high-scoring affair. I'll give my picks. Going to be Man City to win the first leg, because obviously in the semis, if anyone doesn't know, maybe some listeners aren't massive soccer fans, it's two games. Whoever scores the most goals in two games,
it's aggregate, right?
Wins the semifinal. Yeah, aggregate, exactly. Aggregate. Yep. So I'm taking Man City to win the first one. It's obviously their home team, so I think they get ahead, and I think it's going to be high scoring. So that's going to be an entertaining game. If you're getting into soccer, if you have any interest in this at all, tune into that game. It's tomorrow, 3 p.m. on CBS. So that's going to be an absolute heater. The next day, we got Inter Milan, AC Milan. Like I said, very interesting matchup. Just quickly, the two Italian teams is not something you see all the time in such a pivotal game for Champions League. So it's going to be awesome to see those two go at it. That'll be a low score. I'm going to take Inter Milan, but could be a tie in the first one. And again, maybe we have some listeners, again, not major soccer fans. When I say Champions League, we're talking about you have to finish at the top of your league every year to get into this event. And this is all the top teams from every league playing in a tournament all across the whole season. So it's absolutely electric. It's not something we see, obviously, in North American sports with obviously just the top league. So really cool, something to get into if you want to kind of get into the soccer world. But two big games, and we'll obviously keep the updates coming here and there.
this Erling Haaland fella, he's 22 years old. He's got the most goals ever in a Premier League season.
Yep.
Does he have an opportunity to be on the Mount Rushmore of soccer? Like, is this guy, like, Norwegian? Like, Norwegian. He looks like a monster.
You're right. I mean, it's going to be crazy. I mean, in Champions League, he's got 12 goals, too. It's absolutely insane. Like, it's something where he absolutely, if he stays in the right spot, and Man City would be one, this guy could go down as the best goal scorer ever. It's not going to be Ronaldo. So, yeah, I guess I should kind of step back from that a little bit. But one of the best goal scorer ever. He could compete for the best Premier League goal scorer ever. I know Harry Kane's obviously probably going to set that record now. He's on Tottenham right now, English playing. But the only issue with Erling Haaland is he's from Norway. So they don't play the highest of end or compete in the highest of end international. So, like, this guy was watching during the World Cup, despite being the best goal scorer in the world at the time. So, in terms of Mount Rushmore, I guarantee you that's always going to be something that's probably going to limit him for sure.
Because he needs some international action.
He needs some international action. It's such a big part of the game. But he's going to be electric. Tomorrow's a big one. Again, he's going to be front and center.
Another thing,
on Man City.
Another thing we should note is Lionel Messi went over to Saudi Arabia without permission from PSG. I think his relationship has now ended with PSG. The Saudi Arabians are offering this guy $400 million a year to come play football in Saudi Arabia. Are you kidding me?
And what's Miami offering him? I heard that number is going to be a lot higher than people think. And that would be something that's crazy if he goes to MLS, which might happen considering, hey, he's on the back nine of his career, but still the absolute GOAT. The money he can make and sponsorships that he's already making it, but still. This guy coming to the USA would be nuts for soccer.
Absolutely. And you think, too, from a global perspective, how attractive is Miami from, you know, just a lifestyle standpoint, especially for Messi and his family. And I know and obviously David Beckham is part of that ownership team in Miami. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in Miami. I know that there were some rumors around that, not just within the last 6 months. So that's going to be very interesting.
Greg,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm looking at this right now. It's dated May 8th, 4:38 p.m. on ESPN. Live transfer talk. Lionel Messi to accept offer to join Saudi club Al Hilal after PSG deal expires. So that, reunite with Ronaldo. I mean, this is what I'm looking at right now on ESPN. This is live transfer talk. So, I mean, I guess we'll keep the updates going, but unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, the Saudis don't mind throwing the bag at some of these athletes. That's absolutely incredible. Just finally in quarter one here, Justin, we had UFC 288 going on, and I want to apologize to all of the fight fans that listened to my little preview at the end of last episode because I called Henry Cejudo Henry Cueto, which is such a butchering. I took his name to the meat shop and chopped it up and served it rare. I apologize, folks. It's Henry Cejudo. But Henry Cejudo's got an interesting story. I mean, this guy was one of the four athletes ever in the UFC to be a double belt, two-division belt holder. So Conor McGregor, we saw it do, Amanda Nunes, Daniel Cormier, and Henry Cejudo. But he retired 3 years ago, Justin. So this was his return to the UFC at 135. Obviously fought for the belt against Aljamain Sterling. Lost in a split decision. And then Bilal Muhammad ends up beating Gilbert Burns. You feel for Gilbert Burns, who fought 3 weeks ago against Jorge Masvidal. So this guy's just been fighting like a lunatic. But yeah, like I said earlier, we've got the next card, 289 in Vancouver. Amanda Nunes, one of the greatest women of all time fighting. Charles Oliveira, who has just been making huge noise in the last few years, is fighting. So that'll be fun for Canadian fight fans. We'll preview that as it comes. Justin, you ready to move into the NHL?
Let's get into it. I'm ready to go.
All right, it's quarter two, ladies and gentlemen. Episode 62, season 3 of the Daily Intermission Podcast. We got some NHL talk here. We'll start things off with the New Jersey Devils Carolina Hurricanes series. Obviously, we remember that Carolina won game one, and I think that was the last time we talked. Game two, a lot more of the same. The first period, kind of timid play, barely even. Bang, Carolina comes up 4 goals in the second, goes up 4-0, ends up winning the game 6-1, and you're looking here going, is this Carolina team going to roll over the New Jersey Devils? In the back of our mind, we remember, though, in round one, New Jersey went down 2-0 to the New York Rangers. The Devils, who we both were on to come back and have a better effort in their game at home, ended up bouncing back. Jack Hughes with 2 goals, 2 assists, a lost tooth, a little skirmish with Sebastian Aho. They go with Vitek Vanacek. Key component to this series is in game 3, Timo Meier and Nico Hischier score their first goals of the playoffs. So that's big for New Jersey to get those guys going, get those guys buzzing offensively. And I know Heischer's not a huge offensive guy, but you got to look at a guy like Timo Meier who had over 40 goals this season in the regular season. He's got to be finding the back of the net. 2-1 series. We got game four tomorrow night. How'd you feel about the response? How are you feeling? Where's your allegiance in this series moving forward, Justin?
Yeah, so it's up and down series. I think I said it on the last episode. I said I think there's going to be something where I'm going to be on the wrong side every single game. And it hasn't failed because I think I did have Devils coming back, but did I have them winning 8-4? No chance. Luke Hughes steps in, gets 2 points. That's a massive addition to this offense. And all of a sudden, Carolina has trouble with defense, which is the last thing I would have thought in this series. If I was thinking, hey, Devils get a win or two, maybe push this thing to 7. It's going to be Schmid standing on his head and winning maybe some 2-1 games, 3-1 games like they were doing against the Rangers late because Carolina's defense is absolutely stout. Something interesting to look at here, if people are kind of looking for answers on this Devil series, line matching at home, Jordan Staal against Jack Hughes. That's what Carolina was doing every game in Carolina, and they dominated. The expected goals 5-on-5, the shots 5-on-5. Devils had a couple more great A's, but the goals that were scored, their line lost, I think it was 3-0 in the two games of Carolina. And I'm talking the Jack Hughes line versus the Jordan Staal line of Carolina. Jordan Staal, 32 years old. He's been in all the playoff runs with Pittsburgh. He's been on this Carolina team for a long time. He's a massive boy, Thunder Bay born, not a big deal, but he's somewhere that's going to be... He's going to be locked down defensively. He's going to win a lot of faceoffs. He's not going to give that Jack Hughes line much opportunity. Now we go to New Jersey. Jack Hughes line gets away from that matchup because they have last change. That is a huge part of this X factor. And you talk about Timo Meier scoring goals. Hischier obviously too, but Timo Meier is a big one where they could match their lines. Devils have the last change. So when the puck's in the O-zone faceoffs in Carolina's end, they could put out their Jack Hughes line if Jordan Staal's not out there. They could put out Timo Meier or whatever matchup they want that night. Luke Hughes could be taking faceoffs in the O-zone without worrying about maybe Aho's line. Like, that's something I didn't really account for until I saw some of the numbers when they matched up, man. I could very much see the Devils winning and tying this series up, and we could go 2-2 back to Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was huge. I posted in the Chalkboard app. If you're not in there, I like the Devils -2.5, but I did parlay that with the Leafs, which we'll get into. Absolutely disgusting performance by them. But it's going to be huge. And I didn't take note of that. That is massive. When you get home ice, the line matching can be huge. And to get away from the captain, that defensively sound Jordan Staal could be huge for you know, give you more ice. And it looked, obviously looked like it paid off big for a guy like Jack Hughes with 2-2. But we are set for game four. I think that it is tomorrow night. So tomorrow night, Tuesday, we're recording here Monday. So we'll have game four. I'll be riding the Devils again. I'm going to ride the hot hand. It seems like they're a team that once they get a little bit of momentum, once they start feeling it, they can get things rocking and rolling. So I'll be riding the Devils again. I don't know if you like that or not, Justin.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, I think the Devils tied up the series. I mean, obviously this series wasn't done when we made our playoff picks going forward. What do you want to say? I know it's 2-1 Carolina, so a little bit of an asterisk, but what's your pick? Do you think Devils could come back and win this series? You taking Carolina? What's your mindset at?
Gosh, I'm torn here because a guy like Brent Burns, we haven't talked about him. He's having such a phenomenal playoffs. What an addition he's been for that team. And Aho's been incredible, but I just think that as we continue on in this series, that the Devils, they just have the depth and they have their full team. They're working completely healthy. And you got two guys in the net right now. It looks like they're going to ride the hot hand in Vanecek, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see, Akira Schmid again. But I'm going to ride the Devils. I hate to do this because we'll get into another series out west that I keep going against and I'm looking like a fool. But I'm going to go with the Devils. I just think in a 7-game series, these guys are built for the marathon, and they're going to end up winning the series.
For sure. And I mean, again, it's 2-1 Carolina, so I take it as you will. And I think the Devils tie it up. I'm going to go Carolina in 7. Maybe that's something people find surprising, that I do think it'll go 7. I think, like you said, I think we're thinking the same thing. I'm just going to take that one extra bounce goes Carolina's way in game 7, and you're on the other side. And I don't think that's surprising. I could see it going both ways.
Absolutely. And what a testament to, you know, that team and, you know, being without, you know, their top three left wingers in their lineup. There's not too many teams that can be competing the way they are. And I mean, Rod Brendamore has those guys going. We know how good of a team they are. They're so deep, and they bring it every night. So that's going to be exciting tomorrow night. But we got to talk about the Leafs and Florida Panthers. So the Toronto Maple Leafs are now on the brink. They're down 3-0 to the Florida Panthers. And, I mean, for a city that hadn't won a round one playoff series since 2004, and now you find yourself in round two, you think after that series, and we both were like, the Toronto Maple Leafs, now watch out. Like, these guys learn how to win. They did it. It has been a gong show for them in this second round. And Samsonov ends up in game three. We'll just hop into game three on the road in Florida. Samsonov ends up colliding with Shen. It's a 1-0 hockey game, I do believe, at this point. And Samsonov ends up leaving the game. And I'm not sure if you watched that moment, but at that moment, I felt a lot of unease. I was like, okay, I know Joseph Hall had a great season in the AHL. He was 6-1 in the NHL this season. But the playoffs is much different. The emotions are much different. The nerves are going to be much different. And I found him shaky, to be completely honest. Yeah. And even the overtime goal. So Sam Reinhart ends up ending in overtime, a wraparound goal. And I was talking about it with Drake today on the golf course. He said most goalies kind of, they peg their skates on each post and they look at the back of the net with their stick covering the five hole, kind of figuring out which side he's going to go. Well, Wall didn't really make a decision. He was kind of up. Watched him go around the net. I'm not sure if he knew where the puck was, but it didn't look like great mechanics from the young kid. So, Toronto's on the brink. Is there any chance that these guys could go back and win the series, or is this thing gift wrapped and it's donezo?
I had Toronto in five. I made a video and I was all over him. I was all over Toronto five.
We both were.
You were six. I was five. Oh my goodness. And how about Sheldon Keefe? Just phenomenal insight. Great. He says, in quote, difficult to understand Maple Leafs flat series. Keefe, that's get on them. Get on this team. They like, I don't know. I we're not in the locker room. We don't know what's going on, but Greg, did they come out of that game three, like out of a cannon, like looking like, hey, we lose this game, we're done. I didn't see it. Like, they were up 2-1. That was a pretty boring game. Like, that wasn't a game to me. That was a team whose life is on the line. That's what amazed me. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to, like, they have so much experience. It's so hard to, like, critique them or act like we could kind of understand what's going on, because it really doesn't make any sense.
You know what,
like,
the perfect example is, Justin, is Jack Hughes and Sebastian Aho.
Yeah.
Look at those guys. They're rolling around. There's emotion flying. Where are the perimeter princesses? Where's Matthews? Where's Nylander? Where's Marner? Like, where are you guys? I thought Tavares looked pretty good, though.
Yeah, and we're talking about, okay, we were looking at the Devils. The biggest critique we had on them was experience. We said how hard it is to go up against a team like the Rangers, go up against their experience, and be able to play a 7-game series, matching their intensity, et cetera, et cetera. They went down 0-2. They didn't just go down 0-2. They got waxed in the first two games. Carolina, even more experience than the Rangers had. Greatly, unbelievably coached team. They went down 0-2. They're now in the 90th game of the season, down 0-2. The weather's unbelievable. They could be looking at the golf course, and they come out in game three and make a statement saying, hey, we are here to win the Stanley Cup. And they made sure they won that game, and they did it with emphasis. The Leafs never showed for a second that tenacity, that response, any character that was like, hey, we're going to come out and make a statement here in Florida to show we are far from over. We are a Cup team, and we're going to answer the call. Like, they were in this game to the end. They were leading this game. I can't say that they're not going to win a game four and maybe make it a 5-game series, whatever. But, like, I say that because I their roster is so talented on paper, but they haven't showed any reason to believe. Like, Florida Panthers play the opposite game as Toronto. Like, Florida Panthers, to me, play every game like it's their season's on the line, and they're up 2-0. So, again, I mean, it's hard to have any faith in Toronto going forward. It made me look like a fool, to say the least.
Oh, my. Well, me as well. But I think about words like jam, sandpaper, you know, grit. And, you know, look around the league.
That's playoff
things,
look
around the league. And like Leon Draisaitl and McDavid, they do play with a little bit of sandpaper if they're not going. If they're an offensive engine, which rarely is the case, but you do see them kind of getting mixing up. You know, they've got a little bit of that. I think about the Boston Bruins, Marshy and Bergie and those guys. If they're even Pasternak, if they're not going offensively, they're going to go look for a big hit physically, get in the game somehow. When Marner and Matthews aren't going, these guys, They're just not, they're not engaged in the game at all. And we talked about it last episode, Justin, but you've got a guy like Austin Matthews. There's really no excuse for it. It's just plain and simple. You're soft. If you're that big of a body and you can skate that well, and you're not willing to go throw a hit, just go mix it up. Throw a face wash on a guy. Even when Steven Stamkos was feeding him lefts, he looked like a complete doll. And I don't want to be disrespectful, and I mean this in the sincerest way, but that's, you're just being soft, and that's just not going to get it done. It's unacceptable in the NHL playoffs, and especially when this team is dependent on you to be creating. If you're not creating, go have an impact on the game in some other way, and they just haven't been able to do that. And it looks like these guys are going to get swept, because I haven't seen any sort of life from the top end guys from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And you know what? I'm completely flipping the script, and I'm flipping it because I'm watching what's going on. So this is a reaction to what we're seeing. Florida Panthers are the favorites to win the Eastern Conference. Not favorites to win this round. Obviously, they're up 3-0. They're the favorites to win the Eastern Conference. This Carolina team isn't... Seattle Kraken is a different conversation. You know, we're kind of seeing the same thing going on with them. Yeah. But this Florida team isn't that. This Florida team is legit to me. Like, I didn't have them as legit. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm on the Florida Panthers because I read the game. No, they fooled me. They weren't great in the regular season. They didn't show up to the last 10 games, but now they're rolling, and they are legit. They have goaltending that's been consistent. They have an offensive team that all four lines absolutely hum, and they play with the characteristics that you just talked about that you need in playoffs. Their defense isn't unbelievable, but they have Montour in the back end and Ekblad, who are great offensively, and Mark Stahl plays a gritty game. Again, like
Forsling, a little underrated. Forsling's been playing 100%, fantastic.
Forsling on, exactly, 100%. And they have those pieces that Tkachuk's a gritty game. Barkov plays a heavy, heavy, strong defensive game.
Yep. Selke winner.
The ability, they have the ability to make a lot of noise. So, like, I could absolutely see Carolina and Florida go after it here in the conference finals. I mean, they both have a Thunder Bay guy on the team, Mark Stahl, Jordan Stahl. I mean, that has a lot to do with winning, getting that tough hockey players. But again, this, I got to say it, honestly and truthfully, this Florida team, I completely underrated them. I didn't see this coming, and they're a contender. No, I mean, again, it's silly to say that and act like that's a big statement, but I'm just finally recognizing it and calling it how I see it. They are truly a contender to win this whole thing.
No doubt. No doubt. And they're buzzing. And, you know, it you feel bad. I mean, okay, so let's fast forward here, and you don't want to get too far ahead of it. Can the Leafs win? Sure. They're going to have to take it one game at a time. Obviously, can't look too far ahead. And you've got to play with a little bit of desperation, and maybe being against the ropes in three games, maybe they will. From what I've seen, this thing is done. Can they change their game? At times during in the Tampa Bay series, they looked like a different team. They looked like a team that had matured. So we'll see. I'm not gonna say there's a 0% chance. Obviously, I would say it's, you know, what is it, like a 2.5% chance that they can come back and climb this mountain with the reverse sweep. But what happens? Yeah. What happens if this thing closes up in four or five games? Is Keith gone? Or is one of the big four gone? Like, you can't keep running this thing back thinking that these guys are going to change their mentality, because it's been too long. And Leafs fans, you know, I don't think they're going to stand for it. I mean, it's been ugly there in Toronto, man.
Well, what? I assume, is Ryan O'Reilly on a one-year deal? Like, was he just a rental piece?
He's a UFA,
he's gone, and you don't have all the draft. You're not going to have as many draft picks. And how willing are you to keep putting first-round picks into rental pieces? Yep. Nylander. We want to talk about guys. Like, Nylander led this team in points during the regular season, did he not?
Yep.
And I mean, 8 points in this playoffs, is 24th in the playoffs right now in points. That's a huge offensive piece. Is he something you keep there? And again, we had the hypothetical. Oh, if this goes down, you trade Matthews for Bedard, whatever. Yeah, okay, leave Matthews. He's a superstar. I'm not disagreeing that. That was an interesting topic. Even Marner, keep him there. I want to know what Leafs fans are thinking about William Nylander. Because again, you're going to trade him for maybe a younger piece, maybe some depth pieces, but you're going to open up cap space too. And like, how many, I want Leafs fans to tell us, are you seeing something from William Nylander in the playoffs that he is detrimental to be back next year? I recognize how good he is in the regular season, but you can't deny what you're watching here in the playoffs. You're about to get swept in round two, and you're just going to run it back with every single piece.
I think that it could be monumental changes. And we look at a guy like Austin Matthews. He's only got one more year left on his deal. You've got a huge decision to make, because if you're not feeling like he's going to re-sign, you want to get some return for a guy like Austin Matthews. And I don't think Willie's, I think Willie might have one more year as well. So there's going to be some huge decisions to make. Obviously, we know that Kyle Dubas, he doesn't have a contract. He's a lame duck GM. So, I mean, they could just ship house and it could be a clean sweep retool in Toronto, but that's going to be such an interesting case. Let's move on out west. We've got the Dallas Stars and Seattle Kraken, and this is a team that I just cannot get behind. But they can, like, they just keep on surprising me. Seven different goal scorers. Dallas ends up tying the series 1-1 at home. They get the 4-2 win. We talked about it last episode. Seattle goes at home where they haven't been fantastic all season long. They win 7-2, seven different goal scorers. These guys just won't go away. It's unbelievable. And they end up absolutely dusting the Dallas Stars, and now they've got a 2-1 lead with Game 4 going at home.
It's insane. I mean, this is a team, again, we talked about them beginning of playoffs, and I brought up their depth and experience is underrated, but man, did I absolutely not think that they could be doing this in round two. I thought it was pretty bold to be saying they'll push Avs to Game 6 or 7 here, Greg. Like, that's what we thought we were making bold statements with that.
Yeah.
They're sitting here up 2-1 against Dallas. And they're not showing any reason to believe they won't win the series. Again, NHL playoffs do this all the time. You see a team dominate, you get comfortable with them, you think you know what's going to happen, and you get a response right away. And I do think Dallas is a team that has ability to have a big response. And again, I think Dallas could win this series still. I'm going to still sit on Dallas in, I had them in six. I'm going to sit on Dallas in six. Maybe it goes seven, but this Seattle team is going to be a tough out. They've shown it. I mean, I still believe that. But I'm going to chop this up to unbelievable performance. Ottinger didn't have it. And I'll say this. If you look at the advanced analytics, the advanced analytics showed the goals, expected goals for Seattle were not seven. They're around 3-4 or something like that. So a lot of pucks go in on weak opportunities and weak goals. And that's not going to be consistent moving forward. I think this was big for Dallas. You know, I think this was a statement loss in terms of this woke them up. This really woke up Ottinger. I think we might see Ottinger go on an absolute run. I'm going to have Dallas win the next two games, Greg. That's what I see. Winning the next two games, and I think they go back in charge of this series, and we're looking at a 3-2 series where we're going to have to see whether Seattle can push it seven or if Dallas finishes in six.
We might sound like complete idiots by the time this series is over, because I'm with you. I still like Dallas to win this series. And I mean, I apologize if you are a Seattle Kraken fan, because we just cannot find it in our sports fandom to give them any benefit of the doubt. We're both riding the Stars. We're thinking that 7-2 loss wasn't reflective of how the series is going to go. So we'll see. We'll see if that's going to be a freezing cold take. Could be retweeted. But let's move in. Let's move into this final series. We got to talk about the Edmonton Oilers' response here. So we don't want to get too far ahead of anything. It's been one game that was a lot of Las Vegas Golden Knights. It's been one game. It's been a lot of Edmonton Oilers. But Leon Draisaitl, he's got 13 goals in eight games. The record in a playoff run for goals is 19. Is it a formality at this point that he's going to get to that number? I think that if they win this, I mean, he might get close after two series. McDavid was absolutely buzzing. That shorthanded goal was phenomenal. Skinner played unbelievable. 31 stops and 32 shots. I mean, it got a little rough and tough at the end. You got Evander Kane throwing laughs in the media. He says, if you want to F around, you want to fuck around, you're going to find out. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers, that was a statement comeback. Now they're heading home, tied 1-1. Is this going to be, are we going to see a little bit more from the Edmonton Oilers? Is this series going to be back and forth all seven games?
No, for sure. And interesting stat here, just quickly on Draisaitl, you touched on. Yeah, Yari Curry leads with 19 all time. That's a formality. Draisaitl is going to absolutely fly by that 100%. Here's an interesting stat I saw watching the Panthers game. And I just couldn't believe it. The Florida Panthers franchise all-time leading goals was Verhaeghe. He scored the other game. 12 goals. 12 goals is the all-time playoff leader for franchise goals for the Florida Panthers, who've been around since 1993, by the way. I know they're new, but 93. It's 2023. Leon Draisaitl has 13 goals this playoff season.
In eight 13 games. 13
goals. He has more goals than the record playoff all-time. That's season over season for the Panthers player who has 12, Verhaeghe. And kudos to him. Great stat. He's going to be a great player. He's having a great season. Leon Draisaitl's already broken that in this playoffs alone. It is unbelievable. And in terms of the Oilers versus Vegas game here, the Oilers are now the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. That's where we are right now, okay? And the Oilers are absolutely... Vegas loves... I'm not talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. We're talking about the bookkeepers down there. Love Edmonton in this game tonight. And we had Edmonton in five or six games, and I couldn't be more happy about having them in five games because I think this is exactly where it's going. I think Edmonton wins this game at home. That they go 2-1. Okay, they split on the road. That's all you have to do. Split on the road, you're in a great spot. Yep. They win at home this game. I think they win at home the next game. They go up 3-1. And I think they go into Vegas, and Jack Eichel and his character that we've already seen. I'm a Buffalo fan. I don't want to talk about the grudges I may have on him or not. That is not – Mark Stone, maybe. Mark Stone and Pietrangelo might be able to get this group up for that game. But with the goalie situation in Vegas and how hot this Oilers team – Oilers don't win game one. We already talked about this. They lose every series first game.
Yeah.
This is just nothing to react about. Give them game one, and now McDavid and Drad are going to go absolutely ballistic. I have Edmonton easily in five. I am so confident in Edmonton in five.
I like it, man. I like the Edmonton Oilers a lot, and I've been bullish. I mean, these two guys, this power play, like 55% or something ridiculous. God. Like as soon, like you cannot take penalties. Does that change the way you play in the playoffs? You got to be so careful because you know as soon as you head to the box, it's a coin flip. These guys are scoring. It's absolutely outrageous. It's been incredible. You can't say it enough. I mean, number 29 for the Edmonton Oilers, he has been the best player in the playoffs, and it's just not even close. McDavid said it in his interview. They kind of just trade back and forth nights. Who's the best player in the NHL? And it's one of those two guys. So, I mean, it's just such a deadly team. And obviously, we got to give a little bit of love to – I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name. Is it Woodcroft, the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers? Yep. I mean, ever since this guy's come in, They have just been phenomenal. And I don't know what he's doing in that dressing room to push the buttons, but that Ekholm trade too at the deadline was just incredible. And they're getting, their depth, they're playing tough. And, oh man, I've really enjoyed what I've seen out of the Edmonton Oilers. And I know, we're going to overreact to that big win, but tonight's going to be a phenomenal game. Cannot wait to watch. Josh, let's move into the halftime show here. So we've got what comes to mind when you think of blank. So we'll give each other just random categories throughout the sports world. And what comes to mind when you think of blank? So I'm going to give you five categories here, Justin, and they're just very, very standard categories. You could say an athlete, team, whatever really in the sports world comes to mind.
Love it.
What comes to mind when you think of the number 7?
Gosh, when I think of the number 7, I'm going to go with the Patriots. Are they at 7? Are they at 7 right now?
Tom Brady.
I'm thinking Tom Brady just winning Super Bowl, setting the records there. Whether it's 7 overall or whatever it is, that's what I think of when I think of 7. It's just that's a number that I don't know will ever be beaten by a single player.
Huh. It's going to be tough. It's got more than any other franchise. Between the legs hockey goal.
Oh, between the leg hockey goal. Gosh, which one do I think about? I'm thinking Datsyuk. I don't know how many he's got. I'm thinking McDavid on Dallas. Oh, they're coming to me now. Like, someone, I can't remember who was it. A beauty on my Buffalo Sabres too. I saw that one way too often. But
was it Tim Connolly? Did Tim Connolly have a nasty one?
I don't. It might have been.
I don't know.
You know who I'm thinking of too? That just the Rangers guy,
Malik. Malik in like the 15th round. One. Yeah, I know.
That was a nice goal.
Linebacker.
Erlacher comes to mind, right? Isn't he he's an all-timer. He's
oh,
all-timer.
My goodness.
You think of linebacker, you think of just crushing humans, and that's what Erlacher, that's why he comes to mind immediately. Didn't even have to think about it. That guy's all-time.
Steroids.
Alex Rodriguez, that was quick. That was too quick.
I didn't know what direction.
I didn't mind A-Rod. I mean, I know he's got steroids, but I thought he was a pretty electric player. He's good on... got a little social media stuff going. He's obviously on the networks there for baseball, but A-Rod does come to mind when you say that.
The Detroit Pistons.
The Malice in the Palace, no?
Oh, I would
that's
say.
Got to be what it is. What a mess that was. a little bit of early Dennis Rodman comes to mind, obviously from seeing that stuff in the documentary, but for sure, that's what I think of when I think Pistons.
I love it. I love it. You got a few for me?
All right, I got five for you here. Ready?
Let's do it.
All right, first one. We're in playoffs. Let's go. Clutch.
Yeah, clutch. Who do I think of when I think clutch? I'll say Justin Williams.
100%. That's exactly what I thought, man. Mr. Game 7.
Mr. Game 7. I like it.
All right. Greatest sports city. Who are you thinking of?
Boston.
Too easy. Come on. Too easy with you, especially. All right. Draft bust.
Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
Drafted ahead of Peyton Manning, correct?
Yeah, I think he was in that one.
He was
right?
Number one, ridiculous. And then Peyton Manning was two. Yeah.
All right. European legend.
European legend. David Beckham?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, David Beckham.
All right, last one. Sports disgrace.
Oh, gosh. Do I go with, was it Greg Oden?
Greg Oden? Yeah, I mean, hey.
Sports disgrace. I mean, you could have got Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, that's not a bad one, too, for sure.
Yeah.
You know who I kind of think about a little bit and you feel for is Antonio Brown, because that guy was unbelievable.
100%.
He just went off the rails, man.
Antonio Brown's a good one, too. Who all sports disgrace? Gosh, there's, I mean, there'd be a long list if you could.
Long list.
Oh my.
Long list.
We might have to draft that sometime. The biggest sports, biggest disgraces in sports.
I'm gonna highlight that one. That would be unreal. Hey, that's a good one though.
That's a good little halftime show, folks. Hopefully you guys had some different names. Hopefully you guys thought our train of thoughts were on the right path there, but that's a halftime show. Episode 62, season 3 of the Daily Intermission Podcast. We're moving into quarter 3 here, Justin. And we've got some NBA to talk about. Let's move right into the Boston Celtics, Philadelphia 76ers series. Game 3, Boston Celtics take it. Solid games from Tatum and Brown. They were obviously the leaders, the heartbeat of that team. And didn't get enough out of Harden and the supporting cast in Philadelphia. Then game 4, what a thriller that was yesterday. The end of the game, James Harden has a clutch basket. They go up. They tie the game, I apologize, with about, I think, 18 seconds left. The Celtics go down. Obviously, the ball goes to Tatum. He drives the basket, kicks it out to Marcus Smart. Clank. Goes to overtime. Again, similar scene in overtime. The 76ers go up by one. Tatum gets the ball, drives the hoop, kicks it out to Marcus Smart, clank. I don't know if that's the guy, if you're a Boston Celtics fan, that you want shooting those clutch shots. I'm looking at a guy like Jaylen Brown, to potentially, even Al Horford, I would assume, shoots the three ball maybe just as good as Marcus Smart. That might be a freezing cold take, but I know that guy can get a little efficient from beyond the arc. I was a little upset seeing Marcus Smart shoot those shots, but we're tied 2-2 now in that series heading back to Boston. What'd you see, Justin? I know, I mean, we're both, we're on different sides of this series, so it's an absolute battle right now.
Yeah, and we're heavily on other sides. Like 76ers for me was one of my like hotter takes, and I loved them for a long time. And yep. Obviously you're a Celtics fan, and we knew this was happening. We had seven game series on either side, and this is exactly what we're seeing. We talked about it on the last pod that I didn't love what I saw out of Embiid. I think that was a big one for me, that I didn't like his answer. And then we had game 3 happen, and everyone on the Celtics had double digit scoring. It seemed like it was insane. Like, this Celtics team made me worry. It really did. And I really didn't have a whole lot of confidence in the 76ers coming back for game 4, but they did. And they showed up really well. And it was a 2-man game between Embiid and Harden, obviously having 76 points between the two of them. And I was following the game and I tuned into the fourth quarter. 76ers were leading the whole way, and Celtics were able to go on a run in about three or four minutes, where it was like 14-2 run. And it looked like that game was going to be over. It looked like the series was going to be over. 3-1 Celtics lead, and just crazy response. Harden went from fumbling the ball in the most routine spots, just couldn't make a shot. Embiid got blocked by Horford 4 or 5 times in a row, who doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, being hidden on that deep Celtics team. But somehow, some way, Harden goes vintage old school Rockets Harden. And just absolutely puts the team on his back to hit some clutch shots. And again, you critique Marcus Smart. You definitely see him more than I do. Whenever I tune into a game and I don't want the Celtics to win, Marcus Smart hits every 3 when I'm watching, I swear. He hit 3 or 4 in a row. I know obviously the last one he didn't get off in time. He hit 3 or 4 in a row late. And it's the most frustrating thing, seeing this guy hit a 3-ball, trot back with the look on his face.
He's a dog. He's a dog. He's a dog.
Green hair, and just absolutely make you feel like you have no chance. But James Harden, it's tough to feel confident when those two have to go off for 76 points. But man, these two defenses are going at it right now, and Horford's game is just keeping Embiid in check a little bit, which is crazy to say when he has 34, but it feels like coming down the stretches is when Horford turns it on. But where do you stand? You're a Celtics guy, more of a fandom than me, just on my prediction and pick that I'm trying to ride. Are you confident? It's a 2-2 series, but I mean, the Celtics have shown they could win the last three games, obviously, and now you're going back to Boston for game five.
Yeah, I like where this team is at. I really do. I mean, it's been obviously, it's taking Harden in game one with a 45-point performance, and then in game four with a 42-point performance. It's taking that guy to really dig deep and show the James Harden of 5 years ago for them to win. And they're not winning, you know, with statement wins. They're winning, you know, they're grinding it out. So I do like where the Celtics sit. It's been a great series to watch. There's no doubt about it, but it's going to be interesting. I think the Garden's going to be buzzing, but the only NBA game I've ever been to was Houston taking on the Celtics in 2018, and Harden went bananas. And that was the first time I'd ever seen a basketball game live. The Garden was buzzing, but that guy is almost an automatic bucket when he's playing well. So it's going to be interesting. I look at two guys for the 76ers, Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris. Like, you need a little bit more out of those guys. We know what Tyrese Maxey can bring to the table. He can, you know, he can supplement the scoring of Embiid and Harden in a great way. He can go off. I think in round one, he had a couple 30-40 burgers. So they need a little bit more to him.
We haven't seen that from Tobias. You're right.
No, we need a little bit more to Tobias Harris. You know, he's a guy who can play, and this is a team that needs a little bit more to their supporting cast, but it's a great series. We knew it was going to be. I mean, as soon as Milwaukee was bounced in the first round, these were clearly the two top teams remaining in the Eastern Conference, and we get them in the second round. Going to be fun one. We've got game five, I guess, tomorrow night. So we'll see how that goes in Boston. Let's move into the other series. The New York Knicks take it on the Miami Heat. We didn't really know. We didn't have much of an update on Jimmy Butler's foot or his ankle. And he comes back. He returns at home versus the Knicks. He puts up 28 and they roll. Look at a guy like Julius Randle, 4 from 4, 15 from the field. Got to be better. Miami Heat rolls. They're up 2-1 in the series. We've got game four tonight. You know, how are we feeling about the Miami Heat and New York Knicks? I mean, it just seems like whoever wins this series is going to get bounced in the conference finals, in my opinion. But they're going to battle it out for it. I think I was on the Heat. You were on the Knicks. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I had Knicks in six. You had Heat in five. And if I'm assessing this after three games, I think you're in a way better situation. A big name for me that being out is Emmanuel Quickley. He's out, sprained ankle for the Knicks. He was a guy that was in the running for sixth man of the year. That's a huge depth piece on a team that doesn't really have, I would say, a superstar in scoring. I know Brunson's coming into that stardom, all-star for sure, but he's not that superstar. He's not Tatum. He's not Embiid, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
That's tough for me, man. I mean... I know I had the Knicks, but I'm going to be someone who's – I'm going to call it how I see it right now. I mean, it's only fair that I think the Heat are in a spot to kind of take this series pretty smoothly. I'm thinking six games here. At best, I think the Knicks could push it seven, but I still think the Heat, Butler's looking like he's more comfortable on that ankle. I'm sure they're numbing that thing out. They're taping it like crazy before every game, and I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue, but I do agree moving forward – we're kind of just looking at a team that, hey, you overachieved in making the conference finals, but you're going to run into a juggernaut there on the other side. But I gotta think Heat.
Yeah,
right? I mean it's a 4.5-point game right now. They have it at like that's not. I mean, people consider this game these two teams pretty close, but that's not that close if you really think about it.
No, it's not. The Bucks are on the Heat, and we'll see what happens. Obviously, it's a pivotal game for tonight in Miami, and they've got all the momentum, and the way Jimmy Butler's playing, it's going to be tough because, like you said, is there a guy on the other side of the ball that can match his stardom? Can it be Brunson? Guy, I'm looking at Julius Randle. Got to be better. Got to be better than 450 from the field. You know, he's got to have a bigger game, and he's got to be more of a driving force for that Knicks offense. So we'll see what happens in game four. But let's move into out west because, I mean, we got to start with the Nuggets and Suns. We thought this Nuggets series was over. When you win two at home, you're not seeing much from Booker and Durant. And then Devin Booker says, you remember me? Game three puts up 47. Durant puts up 39. These two guys know it doesn't matter. We don't have CP3. We will put the team on our back. Game four, 36 points for each. Durant and Booker. The worry is, is that Jokic in game three puts up 30, bunch of rebounds, bunch of assists. Then he puts up 52 points in game four and loses. And 11 assists
on that.
Like, just the only thing going for the Denver offense is Jokic. And again, similar to the 76ers, if you're a Denver Nuggets fan, you need more from a guy like Michael Porter Jr. You need more from a guy like Aaron Gordon. I mean, Jamal Murray's kind of given what he does. You know, he's putting up that 20-plus points. Jokic is putting the team on his back. But you're looking at your depth, guys. You're looking at your supporting cast. You need a little bit more out of them. I mean, and Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, you got to tip your cap to those guys. Going bananas in game three and four.
Yeah, and again, this is a series where we're opposite sides. I've Nuggets in seven. You have Suns in seven. Again, it looked we reacted after the 2-0 series lead. Maybe a little bit of short sighted for us to recognize how good the Nuggets are at home, and they truly are unbelievable at home. But they're not that dominant on the road. Which again, maybe this is a topic for another time. Maybe in the summer stuff. Different sports and the home and away records we got to look into. Maybe this is more in the dog days of summer, but I don't understand what goes on. It's the same basketball floor, man. Like, the hoops are the same size. They're the same height. The flooring's all the same. I do not understand how we're talking about playoff teams and contenders to win the whole thing, like the Golden State Warriors and the Denver Nuggets, being so different home and away. Maybe the fan base is that bigger difference. I know it's a game of runs, so that plays a factor. But it's interesting because I don't see this being sustainable for the Suns. Shamet on the Suns went absolutely nuclear from three in that last game. He had 19 points and just was a hot hand. I don't see him being a consistent 20-point scorer for them. So when you take out Shamet, all your scoring comes from Booker and Durant because no one else scores double digits there. I don't see that being sustainable, especially with how good Denver is defensively, especially at home. I think they could make a lot of adjustments after this trip to Phoenix, right the ship at home, because I think it's a tale of two stories here. I think the Suns played their best basketball possible with scoring from Booker and Durant. Then they got the lights out shooting from Shamet, where Denver got, obviously, Jokic's best game. I still think that scoring is a little bit outside of their game plan. He's not really, I don't think that's part of their game plan for him to have to score that many. Jamal Murray still at 28, which is good, but you usually do get more from Porter Jr., Caldwell Pope, Aaron Gordon. I think that kind of comes back. So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I know Jokic was saying after the game, he was a little ticked off there seeing, he's saying they only have two guys. How can this be happening when they have two guys and we can't stop them from scoring. So I think a major adjustment is going to be made going into next game. I'm going to like Denver at home to take a 3-2 series lead. We might have been spot on here with the 7-game series.
Yeah, it's. I mean, what a response by the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's a good point. You know, getting that, you know, with Shamet coming off the bench and just putting up Jack and threes and finding just, you know, the net so consistently. Can they get any depth scoring moving forward? And with the Nuggets home record, you'd have to favor the Nuggets in the long run here. We'll see what happens in that series. Obviously, the final series out West, you want to talk about a team that sucks on the road. We'll talk about the Golden State Warriors. And we mentioned it last episode. I mean, all season long, these guys have the second worst road record in the NBA. They go on to Los Angeles and they lose. In a pretty dominated fashion. I mean, the Lakers took over in that second half. I mean, D'Lo, AD, and LeBron, they're looking like a solid, formidable big three. You know, you're getting production from all three of them. If you're a Golden State fan, you need a little bit more out of Steph. I mean, after that 50-point performance in Game 7, he's at 20, 27, and 23. I mean, you're looking at the greatest shooter of all time. You need a little bit more offense from that guy. You know, if they want any chance in this series, I think you look to Steph Curry and you're thinking, we need a little bit more. We need that 30, 35, even 40 from Steph to really, you know, counter this D'Lo AD LeBron trio.
100%. I think you're spot on. Couple things for me that stands out from that last game, and I got to think Golden State's going to be able to make some adjustments for it. They didn't score 100 points. I'm not sure the Lakers' defense is that dominant where they're going to have that's going to be consistent. 12 points, 10 rebounds, 14 assists. Okay, 12 points, 10 rebounds, 14 assists. That is the combined stat line last game of Draymond Green, Jordan Poole, and DiVincenzo. I bring that up because all three of those players played 22 minutes each. That's 66 minutes of basketball where you're getting 12, 10, and 14 combined from three guys. And they're not their superstars, but Jordan Poole and Draymond are considered pivotal pieces for that team.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm on the fence. Is that something where I'm concerned for Golden State because those guys aren't producing? Or am I saying, am I chalking up to a bad night? Didn't have the run going at the right time. Didn't have the shooting. But, I mean, Draymond going 2-2-4 is very uncharacteristic. Like that, he's a guy that, I mean, he's not a scorer nowadays, but you're thinking at least he's effective on the defensive glass, maybe some offensive rebounds and a couple more assists. So I'm going to like this series to kind of go the distance a little more. It's another series where me and you were on opposite sides of a seven-game series. I still think that's where this is going. I don't rule out Golden State. They were down against Sacramento. They're down against Sacramento, and they knew what it took to kind of find their way back in the series and get it done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I still feel good. I think you're on the Lakers, aren't you?
Yep, and I'm Lakers in seven. You're Golden State in seven. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I mean, I'm starting to feel the other way after you know what I'm seeing, but I do think that I mean you know Draymond, what do you have 2 points last game, and Jordan Poole. Yeah. I mean, it seems like that guy is such a superstar when Steph's not in the lineup, and then he kind of gets buried in the you know in the hustle. You know, if he's in the lineup, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully, Golden State can get more of their supporting players, but that seems like it's the common theme as we walk through all those series is that. You know, the superstars are doing their job. It's just like, can you get a little bit more from those depth pieces from the supporting cast? But obviously, game four tonight, that'll be exciting for sure. Let's move into the MLB, Justin. We got quarter four here. And, you know, obviously a lot of our attention is outside of the MLB right now. We know it's a marathon. We know we've got some serious playoff. We've got 8 series of NHL and NBA that takes up a lot of our attention. But just some brief news in the MLB. Ryan Yarbrough, pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, hit with a comebacker, hit in the face. So this is the third incident this year where we've seen a baseball hit a player in the face. My question I want to pose to you, Justin, is that, you know, in the next 5-10 years, with you know player safety being such a measure that's taken seriously by leagues, you know, throughout professional sports, do we see the pitcher and batter wear a little bit more protection on their faces moving forward? Just a hat from a pitcher. Obviously, we don't see comebacker hit the face very often, but the batter, you know, the helmet has evolved even in the last 5 years. Do we see it continually evolve to protect players' facial features?
No, for sure. I mean, it's such a tough thing to consider. I mean, I don't see anything happening with the pitchers. I really don't see them making any adjustments or any additions. The batters, though, man, they're throwing the ball so hard nowadays. Like, I just don't understand why more of these guys aren't wearing that chin piece to them. I know more guys do now than before, but you know it's not something where we're at half the league or anything close to that. But you got to think if you at least have that chin guard, if you're able to react at all, you're gonna have a lot of helmet there. Where if you turn your head quick or anything, it's gonna catch more helmet than face opportunity. So I don't know why that's not being something that's put in more. I mean, maybe we see something where it's a mandatory thing in the future where it's not a full chin guard, but maybe it's something that comes halfway down, something like that. You got to think like. It's just such a high stakes, man. That ball comes in so heavy. It's just such a brutal injury if they catch you in the wrong spot. And it only takes one time to catch someone in the wrong spot. And it ends up shaking up the league in terms of that. Yeah, I mean, that it's got to be one of the worst injuries you could have in sports if that ball at that pace hits you in the wrong spot.
Oh, man, the Turner injury for the Red Sox earlier this season, obviously a longtime Dodger, when he got hit in the face, his face is so mangled from the baseball hitting him in the face. It's disgusting. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens moving forward. But obviously we're feeling for Ryan Yarbrough, hopefully for a quick recovery because, he had to leave the game, comebacker off the bat, right to the face. We got to talk about the AL East because obviously, you know, that's going to be the division that we focus on the most, you know, being Jays, Red Sox, you know, Yankees, you know, huge teams. You know, where we reside, man, it's crazy right now in the AL East. I mean, the Yankees are in dead last with an above 500 record. That is just a theme that is secluded to the AL East. Every other division has a team that is terrible. That's not the case in the AL East. I mean, you got the Rays at 28-7, the Orioles at 22-12, the Jays at 21-14, the Red Sox at 21-15. I mean, you've got teams that are absolutely playing unbelievable baseball, and they're not even close to leading their division. It's crazy right now in the AL East.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Yankees. I mean, I don't know how long. I mean, again, we're so early, but this talent level is so high. It's just not something you again. they play so many games that usually the cream rises to the top here, but you got to start to be concerned. I mean, my biggest concern if I'm a Yankees fan is I'm going to say you've played yourself out of winning the division. I know it's so early, but you're out of the running for winning it. And I'm going to go as far as say I think it's over for in terms of the winner of the division. I think the Rays are winning this division. I don't think it's a fluke anymore. We're over 30 games. A lot of things could happen. I'm going to say this and preface this. It's obviously injury. I'm not counting for injury. You know what I'm saying? This roster right now has no signs of slowing down. And I do think they're an absolute lock to win this division at this point in the season. And I think they're built to be a serious contender for the World Series. They had so many injuries last year. We talked about that in our preseason preview. It's not an absolute shock to see them win the division. I just think it's a shock to see how fast they came out for this. I thought we really thought this was going to be something where we could see a jockeying for who's at the top throughout the season. We could see maybe the Orioles early, the Yankees go the middle of the season, the Jays are in the middle of the season, Rays maybe pull out to the end. But I think it's done. I think this is now a battle for wild card, and it's going to be an absolute war between those Jays, Orioles, and Yankees to see who could maximize their wins within the division to get that wild card positioning. I'm going to say it's Rays, Jays, and Yankees still. I can't possibly imagine the Yankees with how many games are left not figuring out. So I'm going to still say Yankees are absolutely wild card. I mean, hey, they're 10 games back of the top of the division. I don't think they're winning that. But they're only four and a half games back of second. So that's still my pick. I think Rays have already won the division. I'm going to say that now, May 8th. But I think Jays and the Yankees are still in the spot to make the wild card. You think that's too early? You think it's a little bold still? Or what are you thinking?
I'll say it's a little bold, but I mean, their pitching is just unbelievable. They've got just three pitchers in the top of the categories. This McClanahan guy looks like he's going to be the AL Cy Young winner already. I mean, it's going to be tough to catch them, but it was some positive news for the New York Yankees that they do have a healthy Aaron Judge, and they start this week off with a three-game series versus the Oakland Athletics, who we know are probably the worst team in baseball, but you got to get three against them to kind of get things rolling. If you're a Yankees fan, I will give Archer a shout out. I get to give Jack Archer, the leader of our chalkboard, good friend of the show, holding it down in Minnesota. He called out the Pittsburgh Pirates FU tour. I mean, he sniffed it out. He said, "Listen, I forget what day it was. It was maybe late April, but they're 0-6. So if you've bet if you were in the chalkboard at, and if you bet against the Pittsburgh Pirates every day that Archer told you to, you're 6-0. You're riding a 6-game heater against these guys. So that's a great call from Archer. We loved it. Obviously, the Jays coming off a sweep against the Pirates. But like you said, I mean, this AL East is going to be just so captivating all season long. I mean, we'll dive into it more as the summer months come on. But like you said, I mean, this Rays team is they're juiced up and they're going to be hard to catch. But I do see the Orioles regressing and the Red Sox. I mean, we went out in the statistics last episode. I mean, their pitching hasn't been fantastic. Their bats are hot. So we'll see if they can continue to play well. I'm not sure if you saw the situation. Sorry, you want to go ahead? You got a little finish your thought there, Justin?
I'm just going to say this super early, and we'll monitor it. I could be wrong, but I don't think I'm going to be. Super, super early predictions here. I got Braves, Blue Jays, World Series. Braves beat them in the World Series. Again, I'm going off 30 games of baseball here, but that's what I'm sniffing out. I think the AL is wide open. I'm going with my Jays to win the AL. I'm going Braves to win the NL. Do what you want with that super early. Might be a big miss, but hey, that's what I'm sniffing out right here in May.
Alex Anthopoulos comes to mind. He was the GM in Toronto during the 15-16 great teams, and then he moved over, obviously won the World Series with Atlanta. I think he's still there.
Yeah, he's with Atlanta.
Yeah.
What a narrative. Does that not just fit the narrative?
Fantastic
for the World
narrative.
Series.
So this is an interesting story. We don't have to get it too much into it, but this Glenn Cooper, Oakland Athletics broadcaster, obviously – you never want to hear a racial slur, but on live television, this guy drops a racial slur, the worst that you can be dropped, and just kind of goes about his business. And then like half an hour later on the broadcast apologizes for it. He's been suspended indefinitely. You lose your job for that. That's just 100%. That. Like, what are you doing? Unbelievable. No questions asked. It's just a horrible scene there for Oakland Athletics. I mean, it's insult to injury. It's just salt to the wound. It's just like, what are you doing, man, with a team that's bad? Incredibly horrible situation there. So hopefully they get things figured out there in Oakland with their broadcasting team, because they're not figuring out much else. But I did want to mention too, Liam Hendricks, longtime reliever, closer. He's been a pitcher in the MLB for a long time. Obviously in January he was diagnosed with cancer. He's made his way back. He beat cancer. He's now pitching in the minors, making his way back to the MLB. So an exciting series there for Liam Hendricks, former pitcher for the Athletics and currently in the White Sox system. So hopefully he makes his way back to the MLB. Cool story there, Justin.
Absolutely. Awesome to see. That's what you love about baseball. I feel like baseball, as much as we give the long season so much trouble, and it's hard to follow sometimes and be that deep into it for the whole run. You get some great stories out of the MLB, and the up and downs of it, highs and lows is awesome to see. And I want here's another narrative we touch on here: highs and lows of a season. The New York Mets below 500.
going through it right now.
Oh my gosh! And they spent all the money. The owner even said he's not sure about spending all this money for the season. Now they're below 500. Like. Yep. I don't even know. Is that a situation like that? Braves got that division on lock now, obviously, with the troubles they had out of the gate. But Phillies are still right below them, too. Like, that could be a sneaky battle for Mets missing the playoffs.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens with the Mets. I'm not too concerned about them yet. But obviously they got to get things in order here fairly quickly. But the Braves, man, the Braves are such a wagon right now. Yep. We talked about it. I love that narrative. Braves, Jays, we'll see what happens. But Justin, it's been a heater of an episode. Hopefully you guys all enjoyed. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you're listening on Spotify, make sure you 5-star the episode. Leave a little review. Share it with a friend. We're just getting started with this thing. So Justin, go ahead, buddy.
Last thing here as we close out, let's make a pick. Bedard, lottery draft tonight, 8 p.m.
100%.
What are your two picks? Where are your two picks? Where do you think he's going?
Yeah, I felt Chicago. I don't know why. I don't know what narrative, but I'm feeling Chicago. The Chicago mm-hmm. Blackhawks are the recipients of Connor Bedard tonight. Who you like tonight?
I'm going to say two teams here. Obviously, Ducks are favored.
Yep.
And I do think that's a big market. And maybe we'll talk here. I'll give you my pick and then we'll talk about this super quick before we get off.
Yeah.
I think Montreal Canadiens. That's my dark horse. I think Montreal Canadiens get them. And I want to have this quick
sick
conversation.
Sick to my stomach thinking about that.
I'm not a Montreal fan either. That's just here's the question.
Back to back number one picks?
There's a lot of talk. Okay. Is it rigged? Is it true? I'm in the belief here of they have the lottery in place to prevent tanking. And it does help prevent taking to a degree, but does that mean that if they did have a little bit of say in who gets the one, does that still not remove tanking? Which it definitely does. Obviously, it's brutal ethically because you're not giving the worst team the pick, et cetera, et cetera. But hypothetically, if it's not true, if it's a little bit rigged, hypothetically, what two markets does Bettman want Bedard to go to? I'm going to list them here for you. Here's the draft lottery.
Yep.
From most favored down, obviously, from last place up.
Yep.
Anaheim Ducks are the best to get Bedard.
Yep.
Followed by the Blue Jackets, the Blackhawks, San Jose Sharks, Montreal Canadiens, Arizona Coyotes, Flyers, Capitals, and Red Wings are kind of the ballpark. We got Blues in Vancouver. But Anaheim, Columbus, Chicago, San Jose, Montreal, Arizona, Flyers, and potentially Washington. Who would you say? You own the league. You're Bettman. Where do you want Bedard to go?
In my opinion, it's not even close. It's Chicago or Montreal, two original six markets. And in today's age where the players and owners split hockey-related revenue 50-50, you know, how can you say that, say, you know, for example, the Columbus Blue Jackets have the number one pick or the Arizona Coyotes have the number one pick? That's not good for anybody in the league. Jersey sales, butts and seats, you know, just completely buzz around TV markets. That's not good. You know, ideally, I think Chicago or Montreal are the markets that the NHL is hoping for. And I mean, we'll see what happens tonight. But everything that happened with Chicago in the last year with their owner and Rocky and that whole organization with Quenville and, you know, I forget his name. Was it Ryan Beach or something along those lines? That horrible situation there. I don't know. I don't know why I picture him in a Chicago Blackhawks jersey. I just do. But I think it's Chicago, Montreal. Do you agree with that, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking a little bit of this in terms of Bettman's mindset here with the markets. That California market, okay? They were absolute wagon with the Kings. The Ducks used to be an absolute wagon.
Yep.
The Ducks have been at the bottom for a little bit now. They have a little bit of upside. They got Zegras, Steele, obviously Gibson still there. They show some flares in terms of high-end talent. They had the lacrosse goals. They're in the media. But they finished dead last. They also lost their last 11 games. Tank job, let's be honest. It's a tank job. Tank job. But
yeah.
Bettman here. You want that California market. It's important to have that California market because California is not a market that's just always going to be bleeding hockey like your Canadian markets are going to be and your northern markets are going to be. San Jose's there, Anaheim Ducks. I could potentially see Bettman really liking superstar Bedard. You got McDavid in a Canadian market.
Yep.
You got Matthews in Toronto. Crosby's in that New York, Pennsylvania area there. And now you get an absolute juggernaut in Anaheim with the Kings building a great deep team.
Yeah.
I think at San Jose, I can see those being important. Here's another narrative. The last one here before we drop off. Edmonton Oilers. Canadian market. Imperative. Struggled for a long time. Never went back to their cup days of Gretzky, Messier. First overall pick, Taylor Hall. First high pick, Eberle. I don't think he was one, but high pick, Eberle. First overall pick, Yakupov. First overall pick, Nuge. First overall pick, McDavid. Third overall pick, Draisaitl. Okay. Who hasn't... What dominant Canadian market hasn't seen the contendership in a long time? Montreal hit on Caulfield. First overall pick last Slavkovsky. Draft with the...
Slavkovsky.
Slovakian. Yeah, Slavkovsky. Yeah. Maybe they hit on a Bedard. Maybe we still see him next year in the top five. They get their Draisaitl type of player, their Nuge type of player. All of a sudden, Bettman's licking his fingers. He's got Edmonton Oilers back at the top with Dave Oudrette. He's got Montreal and the top two market in the nation back at the top. He's got the Leafs. They're going to make the playoffs still. There's no signs that's not going to happen. Like, hey, Montreal.
I'm sick to my stomach thinking about that. I'll protest the NHL if that happens.
Hey. Somebody go weigh the ping pong balls. I want to see what Montreal's is. That's all I'm going to say.
Even if Montreal gets a Fantilli or a Michkov or, you know, they've got we don't want to look, obviously Bedard is a generational guy. He's going to be he's a franchise changing player.
Yeah.
But there's some other guys too right there that are really going to make an impact and be solid players in the NHL. And I don't think we're going to see Fantilli actually at the World Championship, which is going to be exciting. But
Fantilli too. I kind of see this draft though, kind of like that McDavid Eichel kind of separation. Between Bedard and Fantilli, which is still obviously a big gap, but two studs.
Absolutely. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Episode 62 conclusion. Like I said, go like and share and you know, go chat with some friends about the pod. Go, get interactive on the socials. Let us know with some comments what you guys want to see. But Justin, we'll catch you on Friday morning. It's been a pleasure, everybody. Enjoy the sports this week. We'll be back on Friday.